I have about 12 minutes left. Unless you have specific questions of me or my consultants, I would stop now and reserve the rest of my time in the event there is a need for rebuttal. Again, I would just like to say I believe this project meets all the requirements of the ordinance, all of the priorities set forth in the master plan, and we're very pleased to present it to you.
Thank you very much. You have 12 minutes reserved, and we'll save questions until we've had a chance to hear from the public. The first group, which is pooling their time, is Charles Sagerman, John Overton, and Dirk Melton, all representing the Cameron Hills Homeowners Association. So come on up, and you can divide your time up among you any way that you prefer. Go right ahead.
Members of the Planning Board, my name is John Overton. I'm here representing the Board of Directors of the Cameron Hill Homeowners Association. The 57 townhomes of Cameron Hill are located directly adjacent to the proposed portico project to be developed by the Patriot Group. Our townhouses have existed in Silver Spring since 1999. The homeowners in this community have acted as urban pioneers by taking a chance on the development of Silver Spring and committing to and playing an active part in its current success. We were always aware that at some point a building would be placed on the site of the proposed portico project. When we were contacted by the Patriot Group, we were receptive but concerned that the then proposed six-story, 68 condo unit, low-rise building be suitable and compatible with the surrounding neighborhood. When we questioned the Portico Group as to their plan for building height and density, we were told they believed a low-rise building was more suitable and compatible with the surrounding neighborhood and buildings. While the building plan was acceptable, the community desired a design that would not require giving up property rights through an easement. It was our understanding that building height and density would remain approximately the same. We were surprised and dismayed that the alternative plan was a totally new plan. It was 158 condo units, 13-story high-rise. It is our opinion that this new building plan is unsuitable and incompatible with the neighborhood because its size and scale overwhelms our development. There is insufficient parking for the building, which now relies upon the county for parking, and as a result would be a burden to on the neighborhood. Also, conforming plans for an area zoned for a particular density and requiring no parking are not sufficient reasons for tacit approval. Silver Spring's current level of development is proof that waiting for the right plan is beneficial to the entire community. As a community, we ask the Patriot Group's plan development be rejected as proposed. I will now yield to Dirk Melton, who has comments concerning the height and compatibility of this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Dirk Melton. My wife and I reside at 1225 Fiddler Lane and have been residents of Cameron Hill for 4 years. This summer, I completed my term as president of the Homeowners Association and currently serve on the board as co-chair of the Cameron Hill Downtown Development Committee. In the interest of full disclosure, you should know that I have a professional degree in architecture and currently am a partner with a local real estate development company. I guess I'm one of them. Interestingly enough, I've also been working on a luxury high-rise condominium development. In June, my firm received full zoning approval to build the tallest condominium in the Washington area, a 300-foot tower in Arlington overlooking the Potomac River. I'm not an enemy of height and density. In fact, I embrace it in the right location. A 13-story building at this location on Fiddler Lane is anything but right. The Cameron Hill Board spent considerable time and effort with the applicant, negotiating in good faith a six-story project that comprised their original project plan application last November, a project that would not have been built without granting property rights on our part in the form of an easement. I think it goes without saying that by asking for a design alternative that eliminated the need for an easement, that a 13-story building wasn't part of the deal. But that's where we are, and it's up for you to decide whether a doubling of building density and 7 extra stories of height is justified by the public good that this project creates. through the proposed public amenities and parking diagram is virtually identical to the original six-story application that was proposed before. We would argue that this is not acceptable. The purpose clause of Montgomery County Zoning Ordinance for CBD R2 properties under Section 59-C.6.212 subparagraph C seeks, quote, to encourage designs which produce a desirable relationship between the individual buildings in the central business district, between the buildings and the circulation system, and between the central business district and adjacent areas, unquote. A 13-story building does none of these things, because a building of this size does not respect the scale and character of the Cameron Hill community. The staff report describes our homes as an anomaly that was underutilized, one that wouldn't be here if it were a new project being proposed today. How is this intended to diminish the fact that our community exists in downtown Silver Spring? With all due respect, it's a rather cavalier way to characterize the people who were the first residential stakeholders in the Grand Silver Spring revitalization. 7 years ago, when Cameron Hill project was announced, it was celebrated as a shining example of smart growth and transit-oriented development. Cameron Hill should not be marginalized because the planning staff has decided that townhomes are no longer consistent with their current vision for Silver Spring. New projects must respond and respect the context provided by existing projects, something that the current project plan application fails to do. 13-story buildings are not compatible with townhouses. While other high-rise buildings indeed make up the urban fabric of our community, a matter of proximity is very important. The proposed building will be significantly closer to our homes than any other existing building in Silver Spring. We have a 14-story building across Fiddler Lane and a 17-story building across 2nd Avenue, both offices. However, none of these buildings is closer than 80 feet to any of our homes. The home of the most affected resident by this proposal, Ms. Atterbury, is currently 180 feet away from the office building across Fiddler, whereas the portico building will stand approximately 35 feet from her home as proposed. 35 feet is less than the length of the room that we sit in now. Now imagine the rear wall of this room extending almost 140 feet in the air. The proposed structure is both closer and taller than the one that was originally proposed, and is a step in the wrong direction. Even placed approximately where it is on the project plan application, it creates a narrow, dark alley out of Fiddler Lane, as evidenced by the exhibit just given to us a few minutes ago. Interestingly enough, the applicant knows this. In the original project plan application, the applicant made a special effort to herald the humane scale of the six-story building. Page 14 of the original application from November 2003 states that the building, quote, the building has been planned to provide a desirable transition from the high-rise buildings on the east to the three- and four-story townhouses on the west, maintaining a reasonable neighborhood scale, unquote. Not surprisingly, the sentence was eliminated from the subsequent project plan application in its entirety. In fact, the applicant has gone out of its way to conceal the true size of the proposed building. The applicant's architectural rendering on page 15 of the staff report grossly misrepresents the scale of the building. By reconstructing the prospective vanishing points and building proportions, out of this drawing, we've determined that the mass of the building is one that's about 10 stories tall, not 13. In addition, the distance from our property line to the rear facade of their building is shown greater than it actually is, which somewhat comically would place their building square in the middle of Fiddler Lane. I know the tricks of the trade the developers use. I don't want you to be fooled by sophisticated-looking computer graphics that look real, but in reality, it's more fiction than fact. So what we have here is a building that's twice as large and tall as the original submission. What happened exactly between November 2003 and May 2004? Did the definition of sensitive urban design suddenly change in the 6 months between applications? Hardly. The applicant claimed that the change in structural systems from wood to concrete required additional building height to make up for the cost premium involved. Believe it or not, we agree with that. However, after estimating parameter pricing with a local construction company, we determined that the cost premium could be made up in two stories, not seven. So the extra five stories between 8 and 13 are pure profit for the developer, profit that is not reflected in additional public amenities or even extra parking to support the building. The applicant has added almost 84,000 square feet of density over and above the six-story proposal. At current condo market rates, that adds at least another $30 million in gross sales proceeds to the developer. Let me assure you that you can build a lot of parking for $30 million. In conclusion, it should be obvious that tall buildings and good urban design don't have to be mutually exclusive. My 300-foot-tall condo project in Arlington was approved with no community opposition. We conducted over 50 community meetings in advance of the hearing, and the community members show up to testify in support of the project, not against it. Didn't have to go this way. The major reason for this was that we valued making good community relations with our adjacent neighbors, concept that other applicants could learn a little bit about. At least in Arlington County, applicants who ignore the voice of the community and presume entitlement for something that they don't yet have permission to do are quickly shown the door. You have before you an applicant who has continuously refused to discuss the appropriateness of height and parking with this particular community because they have assumed that they are entitled to deserve these things. Today, you have an opportunity to prove this assumption wrong by denying this project. At this time, I'd like to introduce Charles Segerman, who will be speaking on the parking issues.
Chairman Berlage and distinguished commissioners, for the record, my name is Charles Segerman. I reside at 8521 Cameron Street. Let me first start by stating that I'm testifying here today on behalf of Cameron Hill. However, let me also state that I serve on the Silver Spring Transportation Management District Advisory Committee, also the Downtown Silver Spring Civic Building Development Committee, and I'm also a member of the board of the Greater Silver Spring Chamber of Commerce. I state some of my activities so you and the Planning Commission will know that what I'm about to say comes from considerable experience with development in the new Silver Spring. The issue I'm going to discuss is parking. As you are aware, the subject property currently functions as a commercial parking lot with approximately 80 parking spaces. When discussing the portico, we can't help but discuss the linchpin to Portico's proposal, which is the county-owned parking garage at 2nd Avenue and Cameron Street, lovingly referred to as Garage Number 7. Under the Montgomery County Zoning Ordinance, a project of the density proposed by the Patriot Group requires approximately 200 off-street parking spaces. Because Patriot Group's property is located within the Silver Spring parking lot district, the developer is not legally required to provide the otherwise code-required off-street parking requirements. I emphasize the word legally because although the black and white wording of the rules for the parking lot district support the portico's position, researching the original intent of the creation of parking lot districts shows that the parking lot districts were created to support small businesses in ongoing concerns that could not provide enough parking on site for their customers and tenants. Language regarding implementing the parking lot districts do not indicate availability for big-time developers who single-handedly opt to not pay additional costs of the impact of their developments and choose to externalize these costs to the neighboring communities and businesses. There is limited capacity in Garage Number 7. According to Barbara Barker, before the new district courthouse opened, there were approximately 100 parking spaces available during the day. Ironically, if the Patriot Group's proposal is approved, once construction commences, the 80 parking spaces provided by the Portico site will move to Garage Number 7. When this occurs, we will have roughly 20 spaces left, and this is before the demand of Portico's 100 additional spaces kicks in. Is giving up the remaining capacity of Garage Number 7 across from the Metro and supporting three of Silver Spring's finest restaurants, which are locally owned, I may add, the best use of the garage's remaining capacity? When you listen to the parking analysis, we keep hearing that the residents who park in Garage 7 at night will make spaces available during the day for business use. This analysis should be questioned. On the one hand, we hear that the close proximity to the Metro is a rationale for allowing the increased height and density of the proposed project. On the other hand, Patriot Group seems to be relying on the fact that their residents won't have cars. I know few Washingtonians who don't have any cars. Maybe they don't have the code-specified 1.5 vehicles, but they most certainly will have at least one vehicle, and if the residents of the Portico do use mass transit, that means that the residents are leaving their cars in the county-owned garage for days on end at yours and my expense. Mi Rancho and Cubanos, two Latino-owned restaurants, have no on-site parking. Tasty Diner, whom the county paid a lot of money to move in literally a fanfare, has 8 parking spaces. Why should a private developer benefit by not providing parking along with his profitable condominium units? Condominiums are not businesses or rental apartments. They are for sale items that, once sold, belong to individual owners, and the developers then leave with money in their pockets. Just from a taxpayer standpoint, it's not fair that a developer will be making tens of millions of dollars because he has opted out to not add I want to say this point because it's very important. Condominiums are not businesses or rental apartments. They are for sale items that once sold belong to the individual owners, and the developers then leave money leave the project with money in their pockets. From a taxpayer standpoint, it's not fair that a developer will be making these tens of millions of dollars because he has opted out of paying for the parking that supports that project and then adding what's really an inconsequential parking lot district tax to the condo fees, and that leaves the neighborhood without adequate parking resources. The impact of this decision needs to be understood because a precedent is being set here that allows a developer of a condominium to literally externalize the cost of parking. Normally, the significant cost of developing parking would result in governing the unit mix and quantity. By releasing the developer from providing at least this one-to-one parking requirement, the result is a disproportionate-sized building, which you have before you, with inadequate infrastructure. That is not smart growth. Section 59-D-2.11 of the County Code states that the purpose of the requirement of a project plan is to ensure that the development, among other things, will include public facilities, amenities, and other design features that will create an environment capable of supporting the greater densities and intensities permitted by the optional method development. Section 59-D-2.43, subparagraph E, states that in researching its determination on an application for optional method of development and in making its required findings, the Planning Board is to consider, among others, the adequacy of parking. Also among the requirements is that the Planning Board must find that in order to approve a project plan, because, quote, of its location, size, intensity, design, operational characteristics, and staging, it would be compatible and not detrimental to existing or potential development in the general neighborhood. County parking garage number 7 is a civic facility, just like a fire station or a civic meeting space, that assures private owners, for example, businesses and restaurants, that their investment in Silver Spring will be supported by public commitment. When the subject project takes up the parking spaces that are otherwise would be used by employees or customers of these nearby projects, it fails to assure the county's commitment to businesses and restaurants. Even if parking lot district tax funds are presently available, it takes the county years to locate land appropriate for a public parking garage. In the meantime, the residents of this project, the residents of other nearby developments, the owners of other buildings and businesses, and Metro riders that use the Cameron Street Public Garage will all suffer from the lack of public parking because this project is not providing sufficient off-street parking. It is unlikely that another location will be found that provides the walkability to Metro, the Silver Spring bus station, and MARC trains. All remaining capacity in Garage 7 will be used up by this one for-profit development. The Planning Board does have the legal authority, based upon Montgomery County Zoning Ordinance provisions applicable to the approval of a project plan, to require a developer seeking optional method development approval for additional density and height within the central Silver Spring parking lot district to provide adequate on-site parking. I refer you to Section 59-2.42, subparagraph C, and Sections 59-D-2, Point 43, subparagraph C and E. I encourage and urge the County Planning Board to exercise its lawful authority in this matter and either require this applicant to provide sufficient on-site parking or reduce the density to 80 units, which would then provide the one parking space per each dwelling unit. And actually now I'm hearing it would really be 69 spaces if they don't get the county's vault space. And with a couple of minutes left, I'd like to sort of now take the personal note of just saying that when my wife and I moved in with into the Aiken Young and Taub development at Cameron Hill, we kept hearing how our development was being which is now being characterized as underdeveloped, was a key part of Silver Spring's revitalization. And after the completion of Cameron Hill and the relocation of Silver Diner and the arrival of Discovery and the completion of the Silver Spring Town Center, all activities my wife and neighbors have observed, we're now being told that where we live is a mistake and that it's okay to literally put us in the shadow of a new developer who is now on his third development in Silver Spring. This is the only project that I'm aware of where Patriot Group is proposing less than one parking space per dwelling unit. And I question, why should people who come and take a chance on Silver Spring early on, such as me and my neighbors have done, be subject to the greedy excesses of a Johnny-come-lately developer who I believe is shirking his responsibilities to the inhabitants of Silver Spring? Thank you. And I'll leave this as part of the record.
That's fine. You can hand it to the clerk.
Any questions? I have one question. I understand the parking argument. You were very clear about that. 13 stories, you clearly feel, is much bigger, a much greater burden than seven. But what specifically about, or six, what specifically about the additional seven stories is it that you're worried about?
Well, if I can answer from our standpoint, and as John was trying to give the histories, is this came to us as a six-story building, and that was really no surprise to us. And even with their compatibility study, we did straight-line studies to see what is the appropriate height, because that's obviously something to contend with. And we felt that 6 to 8 stories would still give from the decks a site over their proposed building and still be able to see surrounding Silver Spring. And an 8-story building or 6-story would sort of step up to these taller buildings, mm-hmm. which they keep saying are right around us. But let's remember, these are around us, but they're across the street or they're set back. I mean, even the AT&T building steps up, actually, till its ultimate height. And so, you know, the difference that Dirk is pointing out is now we're talking about 30 feet. And we feel that, you know, we were shown a six-story project, and there was a question about giving up, you know, our fence and sharing green space to help them out. Now, all of a sudden, it's a 13-story building where they're still needing help from the county. And, even though we've been negotiating, it's kind of been put in our face is our standpoint, which is why we're here opposing the project.
Okay. Thank you very much. The next group is Paul Rocket, Rosalind Atterbury, and Brian Turner. Mr. Rocket is first. You have some folks ceding time to you, so you have 8 minutes if you need them.
Thank you, sir. Members of the Planning Board, thank you for your time and for your attention. My name is Paul Rocket. I'm a physicist with a 35-year career, and I've owned a townhome in Cameron Hill for the past year. I am committed to seeing Silver Spring grow and to thrive through wise growth policies, as it has to date. Yet I'm deeply concerned that this Portico project is vastly unwise. It will unduly overburden local services, and your approval here could mark the beginning of a blight that will take years for us to correct. Your staff has taken to diminishing the importance of Cameron Hill by calling us an anomaly. An anomaly. I want to tell you, members of the board, this is one anomaly that's going to stay here for a long time. We'll be here 10 years from now, long after your commissions have ended. We were here 5 years ago before many people would not come to live in Silver Spring. We've helped make the town what it is, and now we're an anomaly. We love this community. We walk this community every day. Our friends visit us, and they find parking in the nearby Garage 7. Yes, our friends have cars. Just as we do, just as mostly every resident in the future Portico project will, even though most of them and most of us use public transportation to get to work. How else can we do our grocery shopping, buy clothes at Macy's, or get our repaired goods at Home Depot? We need cars. The staff report was fairly complete, clearly showing that the so-called Patriot Group almost met the minimum requirements for the county code. The staff report failed to notice that none of the local business operators were notified about the Portico project. Not Cubanos, which sits directly adjacent to the property of concern. Not Murancho, which is directly across the street, before whom Mr. Albino Castro wasn't able to stay as long, but Mr. Albino Castro was here and is very upset about this. who owns Mi Rancho, and not the Tasty Diner. None of their community input was solicited. Secondly, the planning board has been misled, as was admitted before now, in that these, in particular, I was thinking about the Silver Spring Urban District Advisory Board, which had not supported the program explicitly, but is very concerned over the parking issue. Third, the staff report openly used garage number 7 occupancy data based on January to June 2004, before the district courthouse opened. Just ask the local restaurant owners, and they'll tell you that those theoretical 100 spots have almost all gone away by now. They've largely evaporated because of county police who were using that and because of new courthouse participants. Lastly, in spite of the explicit Housing Opportunity Commission's evaluation that Patriot Group had cynically offered MPDUs only as efficiencies, the staff report failed to require the recommended mix of 1- and 2-bedroom units. But your job and the board is greater than the staff's. The staff has evaluated the necessary conditions for this project, but as I understand it, it's your job under the optional plan to evaluate the sufficient conditions. So let's talk about those. The portico insults every citizen of Montgomery County by offering only 69 assured parking spaces in a building of 158 upscale units. We should all note that this same Patriot Group's Wayne Avenue condominium project, which houses 143 units, is providing 140 parking spaces. KSI's Ripley Street structure provides 480 parking spaces for its only 336 units. So Wayne Avenue and Ripley Street neighbors are permitted to control the burden on its nearby public services, but Cameron Hill is not. Is that because we're an anomaly? Or perhaps we're an anomaly not because of our height, but because of the way we're being treated. The portico proposes this 13-story building, 139 feet tall, just 10 feet from the Cameron Hill property line. Most separated single families are provided more than this. In conclusion, it helps no one in Silver Spring to dispose of a segment of the community by calling them an anomaly. We're all part of this beautiful city. Please work with your community, work with us, to support true smart growth in this city. Make sure that the growth is not only smart, but that it's wise. The portico is too tall. It's dangerously close to its neighbors for its height. It mocks the county by walking away with huge profits and not providing adequate parking. It leaves behind a legacy of a parking nightmare, and it provides little but a few trees as an amenity in return. It even mocks the MPDU program by offering them only as efficiencies to our less fortunate public. The planning board and the staff must function independently to make this system work. Please don't let the pressures of time force a quick but ultimately self-defeating decision. Think about this and choose the way of a strengthened community. Disapprove this project and ask for a better idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Rosalind Atterbury.
Good afternoon. My name is Rosalind Atterbury, the aforementioned by Mr. Melton earlier, and my family owns two townhouses in Cameron Hill, lots 56 and 57. I would like to give testimony of a more personal nature, as we have two of the homes that will be the most greatly impacted by this project. I'd like for you to know that we are not only homeowners in the urban district, but business owners as well, with over a 30-year commitment to downtown Silver Spring. The company founded by my husband and headquartered here has been an outstanding corporate citizen and contributor to this community and has remained committed to Silver Spring. We believed in the possibilities of what could eventually be in downtown Silver Spring and therefore leapt at the opportunity to also live here. The day the trailer opened on that property, we came to invest yet again in the future of this downtown. Cameron Hill was so highly touted and regaled at the time. Have we forgotten the ribbon cutting? Have we forgotten how excited everyone was over the residential feel that this community of brick townhouses was going to bring to the downtown area? We knew, of course, that there was a vacant lot adjacent to our properties and that it would eventually be developed. But who would have ever guessed that the same county that raved about Eakin Youngentop, the developer of Cameron Hill, and praised them for the townhouses that they were building on infill lots around the entire region would entertain the idea of a 13-story wall adjacent to our house? One could say that this situation is not unlike that in any other urban area in the country. However, I would suggest to you that with a modicum of investigation, you can look across the breadth of this country and find hundreds of more innovative ideas regarding high-density residential living in an urban setting. Why, then, does the high-rise have to seemingly be the only answer for every piece of property left to build on in downtown Silver Spring? Do developers even feel the need to be creative? Are they really trying to be compatible with the existing neighboring community? And is a 13-story contemporary building hovering over four-story brick Georgian townhouses compatible? The staff report contains, among others, recommendations to make this project appealing to pedestrians, aesthetics for the front of the building on Fiddler Lane, and even art for people who might be looking towards it from the Silver Spring Metro Station. I eagerly read on so that I could get to the recommendations regarding compatibility with Cameron Hill, but alas, there were none. There was, however, an item referring to my street, Cameron Hill Court, as an alley, to which the proposed building would not provide any vehicular access. It went on to state that our community is essentially an anomaly amid a mix of building heights. No one called this community an anomaly in 1998 when we were being courted as stakeholders in the new downtown. As I read further, I came to the applicant's study where the applicant was responding to the impact of shadows on our community of 57 townhouses. It states, the greatest impact of shadows from the proposed 13-story building will be in the latter parts of June and July, with the greatest impact on the Cameron Hill Court and two of the townhouses that have side yards to Cameron Hill Court. The implication is that this is okay if these are the only people who are greatly impacted. To be spoken of in this manner and to have our investment in a home in this community so summarily dismissed in a report should not only outrage us, but should also be an outrage to this board as well. I attended two meetings with the developer, their architects, and attorney, and found them to be just as dismissive in person. At the start of one of these meetings, we were promptly told that the 13-story building height was off the table as a discussion item. This caught me off guard as I believe that decision was yet to be decided by this board. I felt that a cockiness and arrogance ensued for much of the remainder of that meeting and verbalized that to all present. While I was offered an apology and they were willing to make some cosmetic changes, I couldn't help leaving that meeting feeling that their only real interest in our community was for us to rubber stamp their project. We were also...
Your time is up.
But... I think I still had 3 minutes left for my time.
Did he have 3 minutes left?
I'll
give you 1 minute.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
We were also told that same night that the new building height made it economically feasible for them to build this project. A few months earlier, 6 stories was enough for economic feasibility. Economics, i.e. money, and homeownership are both very passionate issues. I come before you today having already made an economic investment in downtown Silver Spring long before these developers arrived and hopefully will be here long after they have taken their profits and moved on. I believe this board not only has a commitment to those who might come to live here, but has an even greater commitment to the residents and business owners who are already here and are taxpaying members of this community. I urge you to not only deny the 13 stories, but send it back to the drawing board stamped rejected due to incompatibility and lack of creativity. In doing so, you have the opportunity to help shape an urban oasis that all of us can be proud of for decades to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian Turner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The clerk has some graphics that I hope she can distribute to you and your colleagues.
She will.
My name is Brian Turner. I live at 1313 Cameron Hill Court, directly across from the proposed building. Just by way of introduction, I'm also a PhD social anthropologist. I practice more as an economist, and I'm the director of the Community Transportation Development Center, which is across 2nd Avenue from Cameron Hill. I think you've heard some very persuasive statements from my neighbors. I will try not to repeat. I want to emphasize that we all chose to live in this urban environment. We're not NIMBYs. We support smart growth. Some of us are in the smart growth business. But we have been presented with a kind of bait and switch by the developer that, is, to me, is extremely discouraging. 6 months ago, 6 stories were the perfect proposal for this site, in the words of the developer. And I say perfect for the site because if you look at the area site plan that's being distributed, you can see that Cameron Hill and Cubanos literally wrap their arms around this site. This is in the middle of our lives. It's not something that's off on the side or even just neighboring. And we have a very direct stake in this. After intensive debate last winter, we went even to the extent of holding a written ballot vote among the homeowners in Cameron Hill, and a majority voted to work with the developer and the planning board on the six-story proposal. We were astonished in May to hear that it was now 13 stories, and I've got to tell you for myself, I was more than astonished to find out on Monday that the planning board staff report, which is before you, basically offers a carte blanche endorsement for this proposal with, in my mind, and I want to give all due respect to the professionalism and courtesy provided by your staff. I've worked with them in other situations in the past. They're very, very high-quality people. But in this case, I think that somebody, and here I'm using a bit of a crystal ball, somebody made a decision that there was going to be a positive staff report, and lo and behold, every section of this report falls into line saying it's all wonderful. Well, it's not all wonderful, and the views and concerns of Cameron Hill residents need to be looked at and taken into consideration. I won't address parking, but I want to particularly focus on further consideration of the issue of inappropriate height, bulk, and visual mass in the proposed location. Obviously, in downtown Silver Spring, there are lots of tall buildings. We think that's great. They just don't have to be right cheek by jowl next to 2.5 and 3.5 story townhouses. So my wife and I went out with our tape measure, and we measured the distance from the townhouses to the facing structures all around Cameron Hill. And in Exhibit A, you'll see if you hold it sideways like this, on the right-hand side on Ramsey, you'll see that Cubanos across Cameron Hill is a very short one-story. 68 feet away across Ramsey is the one-story Tasty Diner. Across Cameron Street, at the closest area of Garage 7, 89 feet away, it's three stories, and then it jogs back to between 103 and 133 feet away, and it's five stories. Going toward the south across 2nd Avenue, the new courthouse is four or five stories. It's 164 feet away. The five-story 8405 Colesville Road is 102 feet away. And off diagonally to the side, not directly across except for part of lot number 36, is the nine-story 8401 Colesville Road. But there's a large open plaza in the middle of that, which mitigates that impact of visual mass. Behind that, behind 8401 and 8405, is 8403, which indeed is 17 stories, but it's another 90 feet back from the sidewalk at 8405. And then if you come around the corner of Fiddler Lane, approximately 100 feet, and we couldn't measure this because the ground drops off, couldn't measure this directly, about 100 feet away is the top of McDonald's, but that's down lower. The top of McDonald's is roughly equal in height to the ground level in that pedestrian plaza at the foot of Fiddler Lane. Now, if you take all this and look at the pattern, you'll see that there's a very regular and very benign arrangement here where the closer buildings are shorter. And, in fact, there is almost as if by design, and maybe you all did this 5 and 6 years ago, but there's a stepwise progression from the townhomes up to larger buildings that are farther back. It's a natural community feel about it. And to put a 139-foot building literally 35 feet away from the neighboring townhomes not only violates that pattern whereby you'll see that the height of the buildings is not more than half of the distance horizontally. The vertical height is only half of the distance horizontally to the next building. Now we're saying we're going to take a building that's 35 feet away and make it four times taller. It distorts the existing pattern by a factor of 8. I've got to say that if you could try to think about what this means, you wouldn't get much help from the submissions of the Patriot Group, which have been repeated in what's before you in the staff report. If you look at Attachment B, there's the faux photographic rendering mentioned by Mr. Melton earlier. This photograph is misleading in two fundamental regards. Number one, seems to show the southern edge of the building is falling approximately in the middle of the parking lot. That's not correct. If you look at the building outline on the previous drawing, you'll see that it's far down to the south from where this is represented. And it appears, amazingly, that the top of the three-and-a-half-story townhouse there, which is yours, is above the top of this 13-story building, which is really a kind of remarkable visual presentation. Now, if you turn to Exhibit C, there's something which is not in your staff report, but is in the very back page of the Patriot Group submission, which is an area section. And there's your townhouse, and there's the 24-foot-wide street, a 4-foot sidewalk, 10-foot setback, and a 139-foot building. Now, if you were standing on that sidewalk and looking up, I submit that you'd need to go to an orthopedic doctor pretty darn quick if you were trying to look at the top of this building. And when Dirk said, oh, look to the back of this building, I'm going to guess that this room is about 55 or 60 feet long. The 35 feet we're talking about is approximately from that wall to this other wall. I'll come back to that in a minute. But this section drawing, not in your staff report, is the most accurate representation of the issue directly of the looming visual mass, an inappropriate visual mass of this building. Now, that issue of how the staff report digests the evidence before it also shows up in the shadow reports. They describe, and I'm quoting from page 29, the applicant presented shadow studies which show there is no detrimental impact on the adjacent community. That is a direct quote. Now, you have, courtesy of the developer, before you the color drawings, which are much better than the black and white Xeroxes which I have in my submission here. If you compare the 8 a.m. and the noon drawings in every season, you'll see that the whole courtyard area, the 17 homes on Cameron Hill Court, are being deprived of their sunlight from early morning up through the middle part of the day, some of the homes up even into the afternoon, in every season. That's not confined to a couple of homes. It's not confined to one season, not confined to one season of the year. Now, I want to go back to how the mental mistake happened to think of this location as an anomaly. I can quote from the board's report at page seven. Cameron Hill community is, and I'm quoting now, essentially an anomaly amid a mix of building heights that range from three stories, actually one story, range from three stories to 17 stories. What they've looked at is the diversity of buildings, but failed to look at the architectural pattern. There is a very regular stepwise gradation from the tall buildings in the distance to the shorter buildings of our community. This is not a random mix. This is, and our position there is not an anomaly. It's the organizing center of this space. And to not see that as a fundamental architectural and urban feature of this area is blows my mind. I have trouble imagining how they could, you all can be asked to make a decision on this case without seeing that pattern and without seeing, therefore, how this extraordinary proposal and this ridiculous contrast of heights is a complete violation of the existing pattern, which I would like to hope that this board planned out many years ago in a very wise set of interventions. I want to repeat something that was said earlier in case you all didn't digest it. The amenities, the trees, the benches, even artwork, a fountain was in the six-story proposal. All of that was the same, with differences only of detail, in the six-story proposal compared to the 13-story proposal. There's no advantage to the community in terms of pedestrian circulation or beauty or landscaping or any of that from this newer proposal. It's just taller with all of its other defects. I would ask you to think about your own experience here. This is a remarkable building. I've loved this building since I first saw it, which is 40 years ago. It's about three stories tall, which is about actually the size of our homes. And if you look from the bank of windows and offices, including the chairman's office, looking out to the northeast toward Four Corners, there are two fantastic willow oak trees, very large, beautiful trees. They're 35 feet away from the face of your building. What if you were asked to trade those willow oak trees for a 139-foot masonry facade? Would you vote for that? Would that be smart growth? Or here to the southeast, toward downtown Silver Spring, what if the Holiday Inn were moved to being 35 feet away from this window wall, and instead of having your planters and your benches out there, you had a 15-story masonry facade? Would you vote for that? You have a right to your space, which is established. Our community, which is a kind of pioneering community in Silver Spring, is not against smart growth, transit-oriented development. We believe in that. Many of us are in that business.
And your time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions for this group?
Yes.
Ms. Valentin?
Yes, I wanted to ask a question about the shadow drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Were you looking at the drawings that are on our staff report on page 8?
Well, you can't really read them in the black and white copy that I have.
Right. So
I've reproduced them as Exhibit D in black and white, and the applicant gave them to you in color, I believe, in his spiral-bound notebook earlier on in this hearing.
Okay, we just got that. All right. I had the small versions in the staff report.
If you look behind my large sheets to my 8.5 by 11 sheets, it looked like this.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
It shows the 8 a.m. and the noon drawings for each of the four seasons. And I've had to outline in pen, marking the word new around where the new shadow ends. And the original existing space shadow is shown on the right-hand side of each page, and also in the darker, it's blue in the original copy.
Well, I think that's what I'm trying to understand.
Right.
Are you all already in shadow?
Well, we're in shadow. Some of us are in shadow. Let's take a real good example. Let's look at, summer, which is probably the most dramatic.
Summer, 8 a.m.
Summer, 8 a.m.
Okay.
The dark shadow going, slanting up to the left.
The one that, if we look at this, see, the one going across from left to right?
Yeah, from left to right, that's right. Then what was yellow in the version I looked at in the file extends out across 2nd Avenue and covers actually most of Cameron Hill development there. And if you can flip over the page to midday and you can see the shadow covering Cameron Hill Court Street and a couple of the houses there, and you have to, in your imagination, connect those two drawings with a curved line where that shadow is moving across that space.
Yeah.
For the entire morning, there's no direct sun for most of the houses on the Cameron Hill Court side, which includes my home and 16 other homes.
Which is not the case today.
I mean, right now, if you look at, we get the sun first thing in the morning, and we get the sun for most of the morning.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And again, the characterization in the staff report that there's no significant impact. I mean,
well, it said the greatest impact was on the two homes, and that was me.
And that is you, but to say the greatest impact is like saying that the bottom of the oil well is the lowest point in a valley. You know,
exactly.
There's other low areas there too. And somehow the language of the staff report omits the impact, at least on these other 17 homes.
Right. Thank you very much.
Mr. Robinson?
This question may not be directed to the right people, but we may have someone come back. But why was the request for the easement declined for the six-story building? What was the purpose of the easement?
If I may, I'd like to address that.
Fair enough.
Again, Dirk Melton for the record. The response that we gave the Patriot Group when we were presented with a 68-unit proposal was not a rejection. It was actually an additional request for verification that there wasn't another design diagram that fit roughly within the same height, mass, and density that accomplished a similar size building without the provision for granting an easement.
Your answer is not responsive to my question. Clearly, you rejected the request for the easement. So, A, why did they want the easement? And, B, why did you reject it? Because you asked for another design. So, practical terms, you rejected it. What were your grounds for questioning it? I'll put it in those. Phrase the question that way.
We questioned the requirement to cede property rights through an easement. We felt that there was a design out there that could accomplish the same goal and the same massing for the developer without the necessity.
Well, then what was your understanding of why they were seeking the easement? What was the explanation to you of why they needed the easement?
The explanation to us was that the applicant and staff were jointly wanting to create a common area between our community and the common area on the existing property, which is a parking lot. That constituted a large majority of the open space requirements for that proposal. If that open space wasn't there, then the applicant would be forced to find another alternative to that heightened density.
So the reason for the requested easement, as you understand it, was to meet the open space requirements.
That was
understood. For the site.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The last three speakers, if they are still here, are Adolfo Mendez, Lucy Ling Yi, and Robert Middleton. And I think some of them had to leave. So Adolfo Mendez, Lucy Ling Yi, and Robert Middleton. And we have...
Hello. My name is Adolfo Mendez. Good afternoon. I'm representing Mi Rancho Restaurant with over 45 employees and Cubanos Restaurant with a long-term lease with over 30 employees. I'm here only because of the parking situation. That's my our only concern. We've been doing business for the last 3 years, and increasingly the parking problem has been there for us to see increasing daily. Ever since they opened the circuit court about a month ago, parking number 7 has been filled to the max. This has been affecting us, and we're very concerned. Right now, we have a lot of people that are not willing to come to the restaurant, especially at night, because there have been several robberies and assaults in the immediate area. People coming to the restaurant and going to the parking lot, employees and customers. We have a lot of female employees are very concerned that if there's not enough parking, they're afraid of going to the cars after 11 o'clock. So this is the main concern that we have. I had a pharmacy in Wheaton for 13 years. It was a successful pharmacy. And because I didn't go to a hearing that they had about parking, I had to shut down the pharmacy because they told me that we're going to get out these 180 spots that we had to have some building being built. And they did. And in 3 months, I lost 90% of my business, forcing us to close the pharmacy. Thank God we already had the restaurant going on. So I'm here just to let you know that please, when you look at the whole picture, you know, make sure that you have enough spaces that are not going to deter clients to come to the restaurant, Mi Rancho and Cubanos. We have over 75 people working there, and I'm here representing them and their families. So when you do all the studies that you have to do, take into consideration that we need parking. And it's if you go there in the morning, parking number 7, you'll see that there's not too much parking for a lot of people, and it's going to get worse. This area is bringing a lot of people in. With the same token, bringing people here, getting all the spaces, people tend to go to some other places. So please consider the parking problem a paramount problem in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Lucy Ling Yi.
Good afternoon. Chairman Berlage and Commissioners of the Maryland Park and Planning Commission, my name is Lucy Ling Yi. I represent the Shanghai Limited Partnership and the Ling family, owners of the property at 1201 Fiddler Lane in Silver Spring. That's the location of the Cubanos restaurant. It was formerly known as the Shanghai Restaurant, where our family operated the family business for over 50 years. We welcome the Portico development on Fiddler Lane. However, there is an issue that still has not been fully addressed. There appears to be a lack of planning for the adequate parking facilities for not only the businesses, but the project itself. While Garage 7 and 2 have been cited as being adequate by the parking district, there is a significant discrepancy in the parking counts provided. Available parking spots at Garage 72 is nil, particularly during the time period from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. It is difficult to find any space available at that time period. This has clearly impacted on the lunch business for the Cubanos, Mi Rancho, and the Tasty Diner. The lack of adequate parking during this period is due to the opening of the new district court. It was most unfortunate that the counts provided by the parking district did not account for the opening of the court. I can speak from personal experience what a drastic impact the lack of parking has on the businesses. In 1998 and early 1999, the Shanghai restaurant business dropped dramatically once Eakin Young and Taub began construction of the Cameron Hill townhome project. It was 6 to 9 months after EYA began construction before the county and parking district was able to work with us to respond by providing short-term, modest accommodations for the local businesses. While this time frame may appear short, the impact is significant and can be devastating to the independent restaurant owners. At this point, the parking infrastructure appears to be already overloaded, and unless proper consideration is given at this time, the lack of adequate parking will only become a greater problem for the new residents at Portico and the surrounding businesses. It is extremely difficult to try to remedy the problem after this project is approved. I hope you and the Commission will address the inadequate parking issue. Adequate parking accommodations need to be provided by both the developer and the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much. Mr. Kaufman, any rebuttal?
I believe I have about 12 and a half minutes.
Plus your 10. I think it is 10 also. Yeah, no. You have 12 plus your 10.
I'm sorry?
12 plus your 10.
Well, you have whatever the clerk says you have, so.
Okay. Well, I'll try to be brief, and then I will ask our experts to address both the compatibility issue and the parking issue. But first, I would like to say on the record that on behalf of my clients, I do take professional objection and exception to certain statements that were made about greedy developers and whether the people who were adjacent to this property have any real understanding of the economics of this project at all. I think that's certainly everybody is passionate about this, but I don't think that's an appropriate thing to be doing. I think it's not very professional. Secondly, my clients have never called Cameron Hill an anomaly. We have tried very hard to meet with them and to meet their concerns. The truth of the matter is neither project was acceptable to this community, and it was an outright rejection of the six-story building. And I would just say to you, if you look, for example, at the exhibit which was handed up by one of the speakers, this exhibit right here, it is true that there are several units close to this building. But this building is not a monolith that is close to all of these townhouses. There's approximately 55 units here. I count six that are substantially close to this building. In fact, most of the units are further away from this building than they are from the buildings that were cited to you, which are of substantial height. Secondly, whether it's a six-story building or a 13-story building, if you're in a three-story building and you look out your window, you're still going to see that wall that was being described to you. So, you know, this is an urban high-rise district. It's within 500 feet of a Metro portal. You don't even have to cross Colesville Road to get to Metro. And with all due respect, the county in Garage 7, there are several things, for example, the county can do concerning the daytime